Welcome to MaxQ, an interview podcast from Peabody's Launchpad office. This is a special release outside of our normal interviews with recent Peabody alumni. To engage with the current dramatic changes in our world, Launchpad director Dr. Zane Forshee is interviewing distinguished professionals in our field about the impact of COVID-19 on students and the performing arts. In this interview, Dr. Forshee speaks with the director of Peabody's Graduate Conducting Program and the music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, Maren Alsop.
Maren, thank you so much for joining us today and welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Zane. Thanks.
So my first question for you is, how have you been spending your time the last few weeks?
Well, it's been very interesting to me. I've never had a period, maybe no one has, of sort of just stopping. It's as though you're running, and then suddenly everyone says, freeze. And I think it takes some adjusting to figure out what to do. It's not as though I got up, the first day of quarantine and said, okay, I've got to improve my German. Maybe there are some people that could do that. It took me a while, I think a couple weeks really, to find my sea legs, and try to figure out, because for me, there was a lot of introspection involved. There's a lot of time to think, which I really value now. And it's been so incredibly helpful to me. Think about what kind of life I lead. Think about what kind of life I would like to lead. Think about my relationship with my orchestras, with my musicians, with my students, with my family, and everything sort of readjusting and spending time on different things. I've spent more time with my Peabody students in these past 6 weeks than probably in an entire year. And it's been very rewarding for me. Also to try to be creative about how we teach, how we learn, how I learn. That said, I've also taken the time to study German every day, which is a language I'm trying to get back because now I'm working in Vienna. And to read some, to go through my scores, see what's interesting. It's been in many ways, I feel terribly guilty about it, because in many ways it's been a luxury. I am one of these privileged people, but Zane, this also made me think a lot about the kind of lifestyle I was leading, of traveling, sort of globetrotting and running around the planet. And I'm really reconsidering whether that's the kind of life I want to lead, whether I want to contribute to the polluting of this beautiful planet, and whether it's really necessary to hear me conduct a Tchaikovsky symphony again at the other edge of the planet, or whether I can make a better, more of a contribution doing something else. So I'm really rethinking everything.
What do you think is our role as artists in the middle of this, of a crisis like this? What is it causing you to reflect on?
Well, art is always some kind of snapshot of the moment. I'm very interested and curious as to what the creators are doing in this time. I believe at the end of this period, when we finally emerge, and it may be a couple of years, who knows, I think we're going to see a wealth of art that was created that we couldn't have dreamt of. Because every time humanity has a terribly difficult period, it's accompanied by amazing creativity. You think of the world wars, when you find the most base qualities of humankind at the concentration camps, you still find unbelievable art. So I'm hoping that the creators, I'm a recreator, so I'm one of those. But, it has spurred me into thinking about the role of art in people's lives and how to be present and bring the qualities of music that are so important: comfort, connection, familiarity, refuge. How can we touch the people that we were touching in other ways and connect with them? Because we may experience this repeatedly in the future. The world has changed and nature is, you know, is telling us, look, get a grip, people. So I think we have to start to incorporate new ways, at least as musicians, new ways of thinking into what we do. But I still believe the role of art is to bring the best of humanity to the surface and amplify the themes that make us human. You know, the idea of shared joy, of unity, of, you know, sort of locking arms together across the globe. And this crisis has made that even more clear to me, that we must really try to do this now, especially with all the polarized situations that I see around me, which are making me absolutely crazy, that I have to be more involved. I can't just be an artist, you know, and I just do art or I just do music. No, I have to be a citizen of the world. I have to participate.
What do you see in terms of, I mean, there are some obvious ones when I ask this, but how do you see the landscape of opportunities for artists shifting? And what do you see as like some of the possibility around this?
I can only look at this in the context of my own life, right? So as someone who really wasn't welcomed into my career, simply because it wasn't normal or it wasn't familiar. For me, every crisis in the world, in the art form, became an opportunity. It's interesting because when you have very few openings, very few opportunities, when things are discombobulated and people are desperate, you have many more opportunities if you're innovative and creative. So I'm trying to look at this from the perspective of a young artist today. But I can only see through my own lens, of course. And to me, what's happening is that we're finally having to embrace the 21st century. We haven't had to really consider 21st century existence until this moment, in my opinion. So that, you know, young people that take it for granted, the internet and all this being connected, I mean, this is, for me, it's a revelation, you know, that you can touch your phone and have information there, or find someone that you have been out of touch with for 10 years. So how do you take this moment to try to bring our old world art form together with this new world existence? And of course, I think it's been, you know, like this at first, of course, because everybody's, no, I don't want to do it. No, please, no. And, you know, we've gone forward and we've gone back and we've gone forward and we've gone back. But I believe that this is the moment to seize the opportunity. And, you know, from my perspective as someone who conducts in the concert halls of the world, I would love when I return to the concert hall for the announcement at the beginning of the concert to be, thank you for following us online. Please take out your cell phone now. Please take a picture of us. Please videotape this. Please share this with everyone. Please disseminate this as far and as wide as you possibly can. Instead of what it was before COVID, which was the taking of photographs is strictly prohibited. Any videotaping is not permitted. You know, I think this is from the last century now. So can we start to embrace it and bring it into what we're doing? So that's what I would be looking at, particularly as a young artist, how to integrate this new technology. It still has a long way to go. You know, I'm very, very interested working with some VR and AI people now, you know, because there are a lot of limitations that prohibit us from actually playing online together or making music. But I'm sure we can figure out how to do it.
Yeah. So really seeing, taking the tools we have and reimagining how we can use them in the work that we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. No, exactly. I mean, and you know, the gifts that we've been given, we should share broadly and widely. And I've given more talks over the past 6 weeks. I've given more lessons. I've taught people conducting far and wide. And I happily do it because I believe that, you know, if I played violin well enough, I would be teaching violin online and maybe doing it for free so that, you know, I could gather more people into our camp.
That's really, it makes me want to ask this other question, which is, so if you were, you're seeing like the, one of the possibilities being like embracing technology in new ways with our, mm-hmm. the work that we're doing as artists. If you were to go back in time and see yourself at 20, knowing what you know now, but you're in this situation, like what's some of the advice you would give yourself to position yourself with this time? Because while we are in some ways, depending on how you frame it, like we're all at home, we do have time in new ways to kind of explore. I'm curious what you would be thinking about.
I would say that when I was 20, but probably it's a theme of my life, I was in a big hurry for something. And as you get old, you realize, whoa, it's too bad I was in such a hurry to get here. You know, I'd like to slow it down now a little bit. And I would say, really slow it down. You've got a lot of time and you have this incredible gift of time. I mean, that's the one thing you can never get back is time. And you have this time and you can use it however you want. Not that you have to jam every minute together, you know, with learning and things, but how about some music that you absolutely love? How about delving into the politics surrounding that, the creation of that piece, reading a biography, reading a history of what was going on, start to educate yourself. You know, I mean, we could even start with the idea of a worldwide pandemic and go back 100 years, a little more, and look at that time period and educate yourself about the human history so that you feel connected to those people. I mean, it's such a luxury that I would say, don't take it for granted. Because, you know, in some ways, hopefully you'll never have this luxury again.
How would you recommend a student, and particularly let's talk about someone in a that's studying a role such as yours, where collaboration is such a key point of this. How would you suggest they also, and I think this is going to tie in with what you just said, but how would you recommend that they manage their time for future projects when so many things are suddenly uncertain?
You know, uncertainty is probably the one definite that we're well suited for. Uncertainty is the one definite we're well suited for. You know, I think musicians will be the most adaptable on the planet in a way because we are bred from the cloth of uncertainty. And there's no defined pathway to one's career, to one's success, there's often no security. So I think that I think embracing uncertainty, maybe not embracing, that's a lot to ask, but I think learning how to take it on board and just roll with the punches a bit is a very, very important life lesson for a musician. You know, for a conductor, you get one job and you think, oh, that's great, I'm going to be here forever. And then maybe it doesn't work out, so then you leave, or you get another offer, and then suddenly from the left side, you go to Brazil. You know, for me, it's been like crazy. And there's nothing is certain in the business. So try to use this as a learning moment. But that said, I think that you can still plan your own destiny. You can plan things to do a year out from now. You can plan something really special for yourself, even if it's, you know, I've been dying to conduct Mahler 4. I'm going to get 13 players and do the chamber version of that. And I'm going to do it. Okay, great. You know, you can find a project and self-motivate. And that's also another very important tool for we as musicians.
One of the tools I think that's really important is really that sort of that self-motivation. I'm wondering, can you talk about, and I'm sure this is something you talk about in your own teaching, but this idea of like the schedule, like with a career like yours, where you're in so many different places, you're doing a lot of different things. Can you talk about how you cultivated an ability to like manage multiple projects and in a sense, time management, but really having those long-term visions and how you build towards that?
Yeah, of course. You know, I think that it depends on your personality also. You know, I don't think everyone has the same capacity. I think all of my friends would say that I'm insane and that my multitasking is, it's almost, the proportion is beyond huge. It's almost obscene. You know, it's so at the edge of what a human being should be doing. And this has given me time to see their point of view a little bit too. But I think that I thrive under that. You know, that's part of what gives me energy. It's part of what stokes my fire to go on. So that's just part of who I am, because my parents were exactly like this. They had 5,000 projects, and my father's motto was always, you know, it's good to have a backup plan, or maybe a whole alphabet of back, you know, A through Z. So that's how we lived our life. Oh, if this doesn't work, that'll work. And, you know, and if they had a project, you know, my dad one day got up and said, you know, we really need to have a concert hall. So he went out in the backyard and started building a concert hall. And that's, you know, and then every Sunday, everybody from the neighborhood would come over and he'd park the cars and then go play the concert. You know, I mean, this is the kind of upbringing I had. Not everybody has this experience, I realized. I think managing one's projects and motivation, you have to figure out what makes you excited and tick, not what makes you anxious. And not what everybody else is doing. I think that's one of the detractors of social media. I mean, people seem to get so obsessed with how great everybody else's life is. You know, forget it. Just focus on yourself. And if doing two projects at once gives you, you know, kind of that buzz, so when something doesn't go so well, you can go do the other, do two. If doing 17, like me, gives you the buzz, try to do 17. But also try to step back and say, am I really doing all 17 well? So I think it's a matter of knowing yourself, finding the things that you're passionate about. I mean, of course, you have to do some things that are drudgery too. Try to find a good balance of those things. Not every day can be super productive. Remember that. Give yourself a break. And I also think that for me, one of the keys was, but this is a lifelong key. If I was running out of time during the day, I just started getting up earlier. So I'm not recommending going without sleep. I don't think that's a good way. But I used to start my day really all through high school at probably 4:30 because I wanted to practice violin before I wanted to do this, before I wanted to do that, you know? And so I found a way to balance things, but I have to say that, and I have to share that I'm really reconsidering a lot of that as well. But know yourself. If you don't know yourself yet, try things on and then try to self-assess. Push yourself as much as you can before you reach the anxiety level. And maybe push yourself a little bit further than that too. And I think that you'll find a balance. But I also believe that musicians are the most self-motivated group of people around. And that's the reason when IBM started, they would only hire musicians originally, you know, because they wanted people that understood how to motivate themselves.
Yeah. See the problem,
figure out the right, solution exactly.
Without
exactly.
anybody holding your hand.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what practicing every day is all about, right?
That's right. What are some of the most inspiring things you've seen in this time from a colleague or from a student in the past few weeks?
Oh, I've seen a lot of inspiring things. I think the generosity of my colleagues. I had the great Maestro Bernard Haitink, who's a friend, give a talk today to the women who received the Taki Award, a fellowship I started for women conductors in 2002. So we had 26 women talking with Bernard Haitink. You know, this wouldn't have happened usually. I think watching some of my students get together and create opportunities for themselves and others, you know, bringing in guest speakers or this or that has been very inspiring. I also think that people have been very, very understanding of the emotional toll that this has taken on so many people. I have met, sadly, several people who have lost loved ones. And, you know, to not be able to be there, I mean, it's heartbreaking. So I see a lot of acts of kindness. The thing that I hope can happen now, I'm hoping for a few things. Number one is that we can step back from running back in to pollute the planet. This is my main concern. There's been a slight, it's like a little tiny scab that's starting to grow, you know, to cover over. And I just don't want us to run back and tear it off. I really want everyone to think about how they can change their lives. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that we need for the divisive, partisan, alienating politics to stop. It must stop now. It has reached a place that is so unacceptable on every side. It just must stop. We have to come together. It's an opportunity for us to be a planet again, you know, not just individual countries. And if we could find the right leaders, I mean, they're there. Step up, people, and, you know, take us into this 21st century with a new attitude. And, you know, I believe once we get to that place, it'll require music. Every great moment requires music.
Have there been any books or films or writings that you've been finding particularly inspiring during this time? Anything you've been...
You know, I've been very interested because this started before, actually. I was exploring the idea of joy because I was doing a global Ode to Joy project, which I launched in Brazil in December, and then we did it at the World Economic Forum in Davos in January. And, of course, the London and several performances have all been postponed, actually, not canceled, but redated. But I've been reading a lot about joy, which sounds kind of wacky. But joy is it's a very powerful human emotion. Joy can cause people to gain strength together. It's a very unifying emotion. And the idea of joy is not something sustained like happiness, which of course you can never really find. Oh, I just want to be happy. Good luck with that. But, you know, if you say, look, I got up today and I was hoping to have a moment of joy. And of course, every day has joy in it. But you start to savor those moments of joy. And I've been doing this course. I met this woman who's a professor at Yale, and they're offering an online course in happiness and joy. And so I've been doing that course, and Laurie Santos, she's terrific. And then I'm reading some blogs and books, and I'm just really curious and going back, looking at the original first word that we have recorded for joy, a Sanskrit word, but it doesn't just mean joy, it means life pulse and all these kinds of things. So that's what's intriguing me. And then of course I love novels, and so I'm reading a lot, and I think I've been doing a good number of hours on Netflix as well. I think I've been doing my required Netflix hours, let's put it that way. But I love mysteries, and so that tends to be my go-to.
That's great. Well, I want to leave it there, Mary.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Zane. Thanks for talking.
Theme music for the Max Hugh podcast, composed by Vincent Fasano.